The irony of this week's topic is quite amazing. I just filmed this whole thing and just found out that it was corrupted. So here I am doing the same exact thing again. So I'm very much motivated to do it. Yes, so I'll be talking about what exactly is stopping your motivation, right? And this could apply to any part of your life, but I have a lot of experience with students and study related motivation, but you can try and apply this to literally anything or any task that you want to do. If you're on the verge of opening a business, if you're on the verge of starting a podcast, a YouTube channel, or as I mentioned, a business, or any of like these simple tasks, right? Some people have difficulty doing very, very simple tasks, and it's very easy for people to judge when they don't know what's going on, really. So there are many reasons as to why someone can't do a very, very simple task or a very large task that requires a lot of effort, right? But I think there are many approaches that we can take. So the first thing is, I'm going to talk about Maslow's hierarchy of needs. So those who know, but those who don't is, a dude called Maslow came up with a hierarchy of needs, basically stating the different levels in which it's called hierarchy of needs, right? So it's just human needs just on a hierarchy, almost like a pyramid, with the most important being on the bottom, and then it keeps going up. Well, they're all important, right? But without the one on the bottom, you can't go up. All right, and there are five, it's a five-stage model. You can say that they're also divided into either deficiency needs or growth needs, right? Because those are two different things. So you start at the very bottom, right, with physiological needs, and that would be your most basic kind of needs to function: air, right, water, food, shelter, sleep, clothing, you know. So your most basic needs, right, that you will need no matter what, to survive, right? And then on top of that, the next level will be your safety needs, right? So you have your personal security, employment, you know. So some people aren't very secure in their job. With all these recent mass firings, it's understandable, right? So you have big companies firing 400,000 or 500,000 of people at a time. It's very easy to feel insecure in your work, right? And also safety needs involve health, but also environmental, right? So you have the place in which you live. You could have an abusive person at home. You could have an abusive partner. You could have environment where you simply do not feel safe. So you have this a lot in countries that are going through conflicts or wars, or some countries even genocides, right? And it's very easy to feel not safe for very, very obvious reasons, all right? So it's hard to talk about motivation to study or do things when your safety is compromised. And that could also mean, if it's not by a person, it could also be that your house has like a mess of hole on the top. You feel very cold and it's not a shelter, but I guess that's also physiological, right? So it's you can look at it on in your perspective there. And right after that is you have your physiological needs, your safety needs, and followed by your love and belongingness, right? So this includes friendship and intimacy. It could be family, any form of sense of connection. Some even has their emotional support animals and stuff like that, and that gives them a lot of care, and for some even sense of belongingness, right? So this kind of need for love and connection and care, it's safe to say, it's pretty important as well, right? If you feeling low and feeling down, having a nice conversation with someone you really care about, someone you know cares about you, can give you a world of motivation, right? So love and belonging, and followed by esteem. So this is a bit more intrinsic. Now if you're respect, your self-esteem, well, intrinsic in the sense that it's what you feel, right? How people also see you, so your status, your recognition, your strength, your freedom, which also not many people have access to sometimes. And on the very top of this pyramid is self-actualization, which is essentially a desire to be the most that one can be. It's the most that you can be, right? So if you take away everything, you take away your source of income, money, house, and all of that, are you the best that you can be? All right, so this is intrinsic and within yourself, really. So why I'm bringing this up is that when you're talking about motivation, you need to see where is the source of the stoppage, right? So where is the source of the motivation not taking place? Some people simply just do not have their basic needs met, and that that becomes a pretty good driver into why they're not motivated. It's very easy to wake up and feel very defeated if you're in an environment where all sorts of all your basic needs, depending on which different people have different ones that may be lacking, right? So when you find the source of the stoppage of your motivation, in some cases it can be helped, in some cases you can overcome it, and in some cases you can't. And with that, that changes your kind of approach to how you want to tackle your lack of motivation or inability to be motivated, all right? So it's there are many, many approaches. It's not for everyone. Everyone has their own kind of ways in which they can be motivated, right? So for some people, the cause of it simply is just laziness. They have all the things that they need, all the things that they want, and they simply just are lazy, right? Like I mentioned, it's not for everyone, but for some, it could simply be that. Sometimes it could be a deeper reasoning, such as struggles with mental health, but for others it could simply also be something on the surface like laziness, right? But there are two sources of that as well, you know, like you can dive deep into anything if you really want to. So for laziness, sometimes you're lazy simply because you are lazy, but sometimes you're lazy also because of shortcomings from either mental health related or something more intrinsic, right? So you could feel lazy, but that is not the case. And yeah, so for some people, they also just do not take a second to ask themselves what exactly is stopping them, right? Especially if you're very overstimulated, it's very easy to go through life kind of constantly being stimulated by something. So your computer, your games, your phone, your TV shows, all of this, right? It's constant stimulation, and some people just don't take a break from that. Something as simple as having a meal with zero stimulation can be very boring for some people, especially if our attention spans being so short these days. So something as simple as kind of having a meal and kind of doing things that you don't normally do could already sway kind of the pattern that you've established for yourself, right? So everyone kind of has some type of pattern. Everyone has one, right? And it could be very erratic, but it could also be very structured. So everyone, like for example, I always wake up and bathroom, brush my teeth. That's always standard, no matter what I'm doing. Right, and everyone has different morning routines. Some people wake up, wash their face, and shower. Some people brush their teeth and just head out. Like, everyone has kind of different things. Some people just get dressed and head out, right? So everyone kind of have different patterns depending on, you know, how they want to live their life. So it's there's no right or wrong. But when you go through life with these patterns, you go through every day, kind of the same routine for some. Oh, sometimes it's a bit different, but maybe the way they do things is the same. It's very easy to get stuck in a flow and kind of be stuck in a sense of not being able to get out of that. And that in and of itself being the kind of the stoppage point for being motivated, right? So doing something as simple as being out of your routine. So a lot of therapists these days are very advocating for mindfulness related techniques, right? So a lot of grounding, for example. If you just simply have a meal of zero stimulation whatsoever, having a meal while looking out your window, having a meal just being by yourself and focusing on your meal or just your thoughts, and that's it, right? No TV, no TV shows, nothing. Something as simple as that, sometimes people also struggle with because they're constantly being stimulated by something. But actively going through that could stop your cycle in and of itself, and that could kind of help you get into the groove of doing things that you do not want to do. You could also ask yourself, why exactly do I not want to do it? Is it simply because it's too boring, or it could look like a massive like hurdle in your brain, but when you actually do it, it's like 5 minutes and it's one and done, right? So a lot of the issues I've noticed that my students bring up with me is that even if it's something, a simple task, right, something that takes 2 minutes and one and done, sending out an email, it's the fact that they have to do something, right, that's a bit of their routine, or they have like all these tabs open with YouTube or movies or whatever, or they're distracted by something, there's always something else that's better to do, and you kind of drag on this like very easy, simple task, rather than just doing it then and there. And for some people, what's useful is literally a just getting up and doing it. Like, actually, like, the second you hear this right now and you have those one, two tasks that takes a minute or two to do, just get up and do it now. That's it. No excuses, not, just get up and do it now. Right, some people just need that little push, right? Just need that, just get up and do it, all right? Because no one is telling them otherwise, right? So sometimes it's as simple as that, sometimes it's not, right? So if you're looking at the standpoint from studying, for example, you can try to apply what I'm saying now to other areas in your life, because I'm assuming it can be, depending on how you kind of twist it around. But if you're looking at studying, right, so there are two ways you can look at it as well. There are probably many of ways, but right now I'm like very simplifying this into two ways, right? So you're looking at the study method in and of itself. So the traditional way in which we study, just read, take notes, memorize, spit out an exam, right? This is very kind of traditional method, versus maybe the attention span or the way in which you study, right? So maybe you don't have the issue with the traditional method of studying in of itself, but the actual ability to focus is hindered. And with that, you kind of have two different approaches, right? So if it's just your attention span, you have a lot of Pomodoro techniques, which is essentially just 30-minute intervals of studying and 5 minutes break, 30-minute study, 5 minutes break. Some people do 50-10. Some people do 40 over 5. For example, 40 minutes studying, 5 minutes break, or 50 minutes studying, 10 minute breaks. It depends. There are many ways in which you can kind of mitigate this attention span issue, right? Or it could also just be kind of being bored with the traditional way of doing it. Then you have like flashcards and stuff like that. If you just Google like study methods, right, you have flashcards, you have mind maps and stuff like that. But you also have, on the other hand, the system in which you're studying in and of itself, which is the traditional way and the way that it's been going on since, like, ever, basically. Always in a classroom, always with the books, always with the notes and memorizing and spinning it back. And this is obviously a little bit harder to tackle, but like there are different ways where you can do it, right? And just because someone is good at studying traditionally You know, it doesn't mean that they're a better human or should be valued. It does not mean that they should be valued higher than someone who can't study traditionally. Because, surprise, surprise, not everyone's brain is the same. Not everyone studies the same thing. Not everyone has the same interests. So it's not really a big surprise when you have something like standardized testing that not everyone's going to perform the same. So kind of shaming someone for not being able to perform at a very, very standard level is kind of messed up and kind of sad, right? And that should not be the case. But that's a whole other conversation, because if you shouldn't study it in a very traditional way, you shouldn't have a standardized kind of traditional exams for everyone either. But that's a whole other thing. But because of the way it is now, if you are preparing, most likely you're studying for some type of standardized test, there is a very traditional way to study that, a very standardized way to study for that as well, right? So you have your textbook, you have your notes. So you you can break that down into what exactly it is, right? So you're reading and you're taking notes and you're memorizing. So you can tackle that in many ways, right? You can use your technological resources if you have them. So you can have ChatGPT, not necessarily to cheat, but to, for example, flip it around, right? A lot of people think, oh, I will have a prompt and they can spit the answer back to me. But you can do it the other way around as well, right? You can also say, I'm trying to study this. I'm trying, let's say, Maslow's hierarchy of needs, right? I'm just using that as an example because I spoke about it in the beginning. I want to study Maslow's hierarchy of needs. I want to understand this fully. And I'm going to tell you what I think it is and kindly tell me what is right or wrong. Right, you can say something like this. So in a teaching method, kind of flip it around. Instead of just reading the content, you can flip it back and kind of instead of requesting an answer, kind of teach them instead. You can also do this with your friends. You don't necessarily need technology. Every one of your friends could pick a different topic, right? And then you can kind of read it and spit it back. And when you teach, you kind of also be the master of the subject to some degree. Not I'm not saying all teachers are a master of subject, because obviously life's a learning curve and all that, and yeah, that's also another conversation. But you kind of have to be somewhat of an expert in that topic to teach it, right? Even though I've been teaching the same courses in my university for years, right? It's the same syllabus, everything. But each time I teach it, I feel like I know more, and I feel like I can teach better and I know more. And it's always great, even though it's the same course every single year, albeit to different students, I feel like I know more each year I teach it, right? So it could be the same as well. You could teach it to multiple of your friends. You could kind of say it back. Obviously, you still have to read it, right? So that's a very traditional way still, but the way in which you kind of have it solidified in your head could be a bit different. So you could use that for some people who are lucky enough to have, for example, the Apple Vision Pro or some type of VR. You can also sometimes have applications where you can have 3D renders of body parts, hearts, brains, and you can kind of look into it and zoom in and then actually see how it works, how it pumps for the heart, for example. And that can be very, very useful if you're like a visual learner, for example, because you can physically see it happening, right? And that can be very useful as well. But if you don't have that, it's obviously also fine. What you can do is that when I was studying the parts of the brain, for example, in my when I was studying psychology, I was trying to memorize the different parts of the brain. I just had post-it notes of the different parts, like the individual parts of the brain, and I just stuck it everywhere, right? Like all the different parts, and I just put it on my wall, and I can kind of visualize what each individual piece looks like. And sometimes I will try and draw it life-size as well, so you can kind of physically almost hold it, but obviously a drawing of it. And it helps a lot, at least for me, right? If you're a very visual, very imaginative kind of like thinker and learner, kind of drawing it into real life kind of helps, because you can physically feel and see what that is, right? I'm talking specifically now about brain and body parts, but you could apply it to, you know, whatever it is that you need to study. If it's very theoretical, you can kind of draw mind maps, right? Because that's what helps as well. If you have a theory that has some type of flow, right, you can kind of draw that out, right? Just like similar to aphasia, right? Some people can think in various different ways, right? So you can, when I ask you to think of an apple, some people physically see a 3D version of an apple. Some people just see it in 2D. Some people just think of the word apple. So all these different kind of ways that we think goes into how we study, right? So if your struggle to study is the method in and of itself of studying, of reading and kind of like vomiting back out this issue, kind of think about how do you think, how do you process information. Use that to your advantage. Once you know how you process information, kind of think about how you can apply that to what exactly you're studying or what you're trying to read about and memorize, right? So if you make this kind of an enjoyable process, it's much easier to do it and to actually be motivated by it. Because one of the biggest hurdles into motivation is actually starting something. That is the biggest hurdle for most people. Not for everyone, but for most people, especially if it's a long-term kind of daunting task, right? So it's the first initial hurdle. Because once you're actually into it, there's something called flow, a state of flow, right? Where once you really are into something, have you ever not gone down a rabbit hole, like of a theory, or you find something super interesting online you really want to read about, and then 3 hours later you realize you know everything about this because you're just in that kind of hyperfixation mindset? That's a state of flow, right? And you can apply that into your motivation to do things. This is specific to like long-term tasks or like tasks that requires a lot of that has a lot of steps and it requires a lot of things, right? Very repetitive tasks as well. Kind of once you're actually into it and you actually enjoy the process, you can very easily flow into it and do it for hours, right? There's a reason how some people can study for like 10 hours at a time. Not necessarily saying that they enjoy it, but maybe some people do, right? So if you make that task easier for you to do, or like more easier to fit into your head and your thought processes, entering this sort of flow can kind of help you do tasks for an extended amount of time, right? So that is at least the traditional ways in which we are studying now. But if you think about whatever task it is you're trying to accomplish, is there a traditional way in which it is being done and you feel like it is not suited for the way you do things? You can always kind of look at it from a different perspective and tackle it then, kind of similar to how we're tackling studying, right? So the ways in which we study now, perhaps the motivation is not to study traditionally, but kind of change the way you study, and that can help your motivation in and of itself, right? So there's also the point of simply not wanting to do things. We just simply, it's just too boring, or it's just simply something we don't want to do. The bed is too comfy, I don't want to get out of it. My couch is too nice, you know, the PlayStation's there. Like, there are many reasons, or we just simply just don't want to do it. It's just unenjoyable, or maybe it's just a very simple task. We don't have any feelings towards it other than the fact that we don't really want to do it. Right? So if you've read about David Goggins, which is a Marine in the US who lost like crazy amount of weight in just like a month or two, and now he's like a spokesperson basically of doing things that you don't want to do. So he runs his life essentially on doing things that he simply does not want to do. He wakes up and go for like 5 mile jogs, 7-8 kilometer jogs, and he hates it, but he does it, right? So simply just doing things you do not want to do. That could be also working out, right? You can look at it both ways. Like if you're looking at, if you're having issues with trying to start to work out, you can look at the traditional ways in which one works out, which is kind of no pain, no gain, you know, like looking at it from a very like painful perspective. And you can do it in a way where you can find something that you actually want to do. So if you don't like the traditional way of working out, you can simply just find joy in a type of workout. So if you love to dance, work out by dancing, right? If you love video games, you can download Just Dance, or you can download sports and then just try and do something there. And then eventually you will like kind of progress towards like actually getting physical and working out and stuff like that, right? So you can kind of take that route, which works for some people. But for some people, it's also a matter of just simply doing it. You do not want to do it. It's painful. It's it's sweaty. It's and it just seems very daunting. It's very tiring. I just simply do not want to do it. And kind of just doing it, right? No shortcuts, no like turning into something you want to do. Just do it, right? And sometimes that's just necessary, right? You just simply have to do it, right? Because it's also this form, it's also a starting point, right? The beginning, when you first work out, you're going to have DOMS, you're going to have delayed muscle soreness, and you're going to feel pain, and that's going to stop you from doing more because you don't want to feel pain, stuff like that. And sometimes you just simply have to do it, right? I'm talking about working out, obviously, but you can apply it to whatever. So take your approach. Do you want to take an approach in which you find joy in which you're doing it, but it could not be the same sometimes? For example, dancing may not be the same as lifting weights, right? It's not the same as strength training, but finding a strength training that you enjoy. Or you can just simply do it, right? Do the things that you do not want to do. There's no right or wrong, and I'm not saying one is better than the other. It's all up to your perspective of how you think you want to approach this, right? This is just a matter of sometimes you just have to do the things that you do not want to do, right? And I'm talking about like working out, studying, right? These type of tasks. And there is actually a biological drive behind it. So there's a brain region, it's the ACC. I'm sure maybe some of you have heard about it from other podcasts, something like that. It's also relatively like new studies coming out on it. It's called the anterior cingulate cortex, and it's the part of the brain that kind of recognizes situations that heed your self-control, that needs your self-control, right? And it's also the part of the brain that has a lot of associations with willpower. And the more you do things that you do not want to do, that you simply just don't want to do, the larger this brain part gets, all right? Because you're also similar to how when you're training your body and training your muscles, and those muscles get bigger. If you train certain parts of your brain, yeah, it makes sense, right? And not saying that it's gonna grow, like don't like over exaggerate that it's gonna grow out of your head or something. It just gets slightly bigger, right? So you can train like this part of your brain as well, and yeah, like I said, it has to do with willpower. So yeah, all these things kind of connect in the sense of what's stopping your motivation. So if you ask that question towards yourself, taking into account all the things I've said, perhaps you can kind of track down already what exactly it is that's stopping your motivation. Taking a second to really think about it. Some people know, but they just can't fix it. Or some people don't know because they haven't taken the time to stop themselves and really think about what exactly is stopping their motivation, right? You can try all these different methods and see what works for you. But sometimes it's also a matter of just doing things, right? Sometimes you gather the motivation to do a big task, but sometimes you just do it for the sake of doing it, right? So how you choose to approach it, at the end of the day, is up to you, because you live with your decisions and your choices, and you live with the consequences of those as well. So if you're talking about simple tasks, like sending an email or something, a very like annoying task, right? Like finally picking out a piece of trash that's in the corner of your house for like ever. Sometimes you just have that motivation in that second to do it. But sometimes it could also be big daunting task or a lifelong goal. So like working out and getting healthier and like these things, right? So it highly depends on many, many, many factors. But it's good to take into account the things I said as well. If you haven't already and you really are kind of scrambling to find some type of willpower or motivation within yourself, right? Yeah, I hope this has been like interesting for you, and it's always a very interesting topic as well, because it has a lot of kind of individual differences kind of embedded into it. So with that, I hope you achieve whatever it is that you want to achieve, and be kind, do a nice task, try that for something that's a bit out of your day-to-day pattern if you aren't already kind to people. I don't know, helping someone cross the street, or just simply helping someone with their groceries, or lifting something for someone. I don't know, it could be anything. Try to do one nice thing. Maybe that will help you kind of get out of your slumps, make you feel good. That goes up, right? And with that, I will talk to you soon. Peace out.